We love comedian Marga Gomez, who you may know from such film classics as Fear, where she and Queen Latifah go down deep, deep into the sea. Marga was born into showbiz. Her father was an empresario who created variety shows in New York City for Latinx audiences that included such amazing acts as Tito Puente, Celia Cruz, and transgender cabaret pioneer Christine Jorgensen.
Marga is now paying tribute to her father's showbiz legacy with her critically acclaimed biographical one-person show, Latin Standards, where she tells the amazing story of her dad, Willie Chevalier, now playing at Chicago's Urban Theater Company.
Today, Marga Gomez joins us in the home studio to kiki about her new, and perhaps last show, Latin Standards, her awkward run-ins with Ellen DeGeneres, and all the unusual films and TV projects she's managed to get cast in, including Sense8 and Batman Forever.
Plus, Kathy Griffin apologizes for the photo where she's holding up Trump's bloody head.
And a phone call to Lola von Miramar to check out her legendary laugh. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you have Feast of Fun in your ears because for the last 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. If you like the show, please make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. And if you didn't like the show, make a donation anyway to help us improve.
You used to give a fuck.
I used to give a fuck, but I give no fucks now. All of humanity is at the age of giving no fucks. But it's like, yeah, it's like whatever happens is meant to happen. I've been learning castanets. Spirit. I should have brought my castanets. I had no room in my carry-on. No, castanets. Do you have castanets?
I do.
But I give them to me.
Here.
This is ethnic enough for you.
Fuck that. That is not castanets.
It says Puerto Rico on it.
Oh my
God,
you're like a white tourist.
Look, it says
a maraca
Rico.
And a castanet are two different things.
Hold on a second. I can't find this thing.
What, the castanets?
Yeah, I had them somewhere, but...
We have castanets? I don't know.
Yeah, but the problem with castanets is they're really hard to play.
They are.
Well, it's an instrument. It's like a violin. I mean, you can't expect to just master it, like, in a week.
Yeah, it takes at least a couple of months.
It takes years because I took a castanet lesson.
Really?
Yeah, years? I thought it was just, it takes years to perfect the castanet. That's what the teacher told me. But she might have been trying to get money out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, clearly.
Okay, our guest today at one point was Hollywood's Latina lesbian action film star. Way before Michelle Rodriguez in Avatar, Marga Gomez co-starred in the sci-fi thriller Sphere, where she and Queen Latifah got eaten alive by a giant squid. But that was a long time ago. Marga is now in town performing her critically acclaimed biographical one-woman show, Latin Standards, where she takes us on an amazing real-life story journey of her showbiz dad, Willie Chevalier, whose career involved Tito Puente, Celia Cruz, and transgender cabaret pioneer Christine Jorgensen.
Yes.
Welcome to Feast of Fun again.
Live. I did a photo before.
Yes.
This is so great.
I wrote a theme song for you.
Oh, okay.
That you can play anytime you enter for audiences. You want to hear it?
Yes.
Gomez, Gomez, she's got your number down. Gomez, Gomez, you say that you're a winner, but you know you're just a sinner now.
That needs castanets.
You have maracas.
Yeah, it says Rico.
Fuck
it's ethnic. No, you don't like that.
No, stop with the...
You're Cuban.
It's very like, put on a mustache on me, won't you?
And a sombrero. And,
yeah.
And
maracas.
Is that what you're doing for your new show?
You know what? I want to say something.
What?
I hate maracas.
Why do you hate maracas?
Because they're
get
useless.
The tuki-tuki.
I don't want to hear this. Anybody can do this. A baby does this.
I don't know. I can't do this. Fausto always
rattle.
Like, anything with rhythm,
rattle.
Fausto takes it away from me. And he's just like, no.
No, this is... hate even that.
That
maracas is the worst.
I pity
the fool who becomes a professional maraca player. There is no professional. Oh, well, no, that's a raspa. That's a whole different... That's a whole different animal.
That's a Gweedle.
You're playing it with a fan.
Well, because I lost the scratcher of it.
It's in there.
It does sound the same, though. Yeah.
Fuck up your nails, you know?
Sometimes percussion instruments aren't really all that.
Mark Gomez, you are such a pioneer of the one-person show. You've been
entertaining audiences.
I came on
the covered wagon with a microphone and lighting and
telling
gels.
Her story.
Yes.
Her story, their stories. And now you're sort of going full circle and you're telling your dad's story. Tell us about your amazing father, Willie Chevalier.
Well, feast of fun.
I have a name. It's Fausto.
And I'm Mark, and it's all the listeners here.
I'm just going to call you Feasties.
Okay.
You have a feast infection.
Here's... You totally infected me, okay? I didn't just arrive here, like, just now and go on this microphone. There was a whole process.
There was watermelon whole process, and wine.
Bestiality. Yes. There was watermelon.
Jesse's very happy to see you.
But the thing is that I'm doing this show, Latin Standards, at Urban...
Urban Theater
Company. I know it. I'm going to be there. I swear to God. Real soon. But it's my last time of doing a solo performance show.
You're retiring for real?
Well, from this particular genre. Yeah, it's my 12th one-person show. It opened in New York at the Public Theater in January. Got a great review from the New York Times. But, yeah, I'm going to probably go into other things, maybe try to, you know, do more acting, get on TV, and maybe write for more characters than just me.
Isn't this like Cher, your farewell tour is always
exactly.
happening?
Exactly. It's totally, I'm totally bullshitting you. But it could be true. And the idea of this show is that, it's my last. The other thing about being a solo performer is that it's really hard because... The audiences are like all addicted to their screens. It's very hard to do a show because people are looking at their phones all the time.
They're taking a picture of you while you're performing.
Well, no, that's okay.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. And also you can tweet me and
while you're on stage.
Yes. But a lot of times they're not doing that. They're just doing their own stupid like cell phone things. And so
you're like, hey, you paid money to see me. Let me talk for crying out loud.
So the climate is changing. And I'd also feel like 12 solo shows. I mean, what else is there to talk about? You know, so I'm ending with this, and it's kind of, well, you know, that's kind of the conceit. This is my final farewell performance, kind of like Cher, kind of like Frank Sinatra, and I'm going to be doing it here at in Chicago. And
this is
it's
the
about
last place ever?
Well, it
so
could be.
So this Friday and Saturday here in Chicago... That's the end of your stage career.
Possible.
End of an era.
It's possible.
You've been
it's
performing for over 20 years doing one-person shows.
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing stand-up also. And as you know, I've been doing a little bit of film on-camera work. But yeah, the one-person show thing, the autobiographical performance that I've done, it's gonna end with this show, Latin Standards.
Did you know going into this that you were doing a show about your dad and this was going to be the last one? Or did you kind of decide as you were doing it?
Okay, so I'm going to try to like make this not too wonky, but what happened was like I do these one person. I mean, like my whole career has been not planned. It's been because somebody gave me a gig and then I kind of came up. Like the first time I did a solo show in 1991, it's because people thought that I was a solo performer and they booked me into this festival. And then I wound up sharing a dressing room with Anna Deavere Smith, who actually was doing it.
Fires in the Mirror,
yeah,
Anna Deavere Smith.
We were in a locker room at UC San Diego and it was like.
And she takes herself very seriously.
Totally seriously. But
and you're farting in that dressing room, aren't
you? She was totally, like, annoyed by me. But she's totally cool. But it was just like, I was all like, you're the only person here. I'm going to talk to you. And so then, since then, I've done 12 shows. And this one is, it was brought about because I thought that I was going to get a grant. And a lot of shows are because I get a grant or some sort of commission or whatnot. And this was going to be a commission to do a multimedia show, and they wanted that. And I thought, well, if I did a show about my dad, who was a comedian but also wrote songs that were recorded, then I thought that would be multimedia because I could have music in it. And so I started working on the show, and then the original theater kind of dropped out. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh, I've started working. I hate working. And then I got this commission I got this invitation to be at Under the Radar Festival in New York at the Public Theater in January. So I started working with David Schweitzer, who's been my director for about 5 or 6 shows. And we put this together, and it's sort of based on my dad, who was an impresario who produced all this stuff in New York for Latino communities, variety shows. And then he was a comedian, and he also wrote songs that were recorded by Trio Los Condes and...
Trio Los Condes.
Yeah, Trio Los Condes.
Tú tienes todas las cosas que Dios hizo a lindas en una mujer. You know that song, right? El pelo, los labios, la boca y ese cuerpecito de pura Raquel.
All right, this is what they did with my dad. Yeah. Paso a paso, cuando subes la escalera, voy contando hasta que llegas el final. Y en el último escalón frente a tu puerta te detienes sin querer entrar. Tengo celos de la calle en que caminas, desde el sol que te iluminas y de baño con su luz. Tengo celos, vida mía, de teléfono sonar y las cartas cuando llegan y no las puedo mirar. Tengo celos de todo en la vida que tu cariño me puedas robar. Do you have a translator for this?
Yeah. So I got lots of jealousy of how gorgeous and beautiful you are.
Because that's yeah. My mom.
Which is actually very reminiscent of the Pedro Flores song. Si yo tengo celos de ti. I'm very jealous of you because you are loved by me.
It's all about jealousy. And then all the songs back then, and the ones that my father wrote, 3 minutes long, because if you didn't like who you were dancing with, you could switch partners right away. That was the formula.
So
that
they were shorter songs.
Short songs.
Well, they also had long intros. People
guitar.
Would sit around and they're like da 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 da. You know, so the way my father would explain it to me is that you had to find that person. So they played the song before they started singing, so you could find your girl.
Yes.
And then you could get into, and they were, you know, in Puerto Rico they were called the casinos, and New York City, I imagine, in the 50s and 60s had something very similar, right? And it was so where people could get together and socialize, and it was, you know, inexpensive.
Ballrooms and halls. And I can't remember. I off the top of my head, I can't remember the names of them, but I have it all written down. But they were in teatros. Mm-hmm. And that was my dad's domain, was like doing these big.
And so your dad was like basically a club promoter, producer, impresario.
MC. No,
he was more of a theater, a teatro. Like, so in the 50s and 60s.
He ran a theater.
No, he did. What he did was, like, the people who ran the theaters for the Latino community were not Latino. So then my father would kind of get the hookup with these people, and then they would book him to run the shows. But they basically owned the real estate, and then my father would, you know, put the shows in there. And then the shows would be in between a Mexican movie, Double Bill. The Mexican movies were very emotional. Te quiero, te odio, ay, ya no puedo tener niños. And those are the comedies. Those are the comedies.
So what that means is I love you, I hate you, I can't have any children. Anymore.
Yeah. And then you have two of these movies, and in between the movies there would be the variety show. Uh-huh. And that's what my father would curate, produce, and then he would MC.
And so how did Christine Jurgensen come into the picture?
Well, there were variety shows, so that it could be sort of a public figure. And Christine Jurgensen in the show that I'm going to do at Urban Theater Company, we're
Latin
not going to
use
Latin standards. We're not going to do the projections that we did in New York, and I'm kind of excited about that too, because I feel that a lot of the stuff that I do in the show is it's created by the words and the ideas mm-hmm. and the imagination of the audience to fill in. But when I did the show in New York, we certainly had projections, and I have all this archival photographs from my dad and the shows. And so there's this like picture of Christine Jorgensen with my father and her translator, because she didn't speak English, but she did many, many public appearances, and she sang. And
now for people who are not familiar with Christine Jorgensen, yeah. She was probably, you know, the first public figure to undergo gender corrective surgery.
Definitely the first American.
Affirmative surgery,
yeah.
Right?
She was the first celebrity trans person for sure.
And so the press treated her very differently than, say, like Caitlyn Jenner, in the sense that they believed that this person physically went through a change. Like, they compared her to the atomic bomb, in the sense that gender had been destroyed and now men could become women and bear children. And so it was a great confusion that this person just appeared to be a woman, but actually did not have a fully female reproductive system inside their bodies. And so Christine Jorgensen was sort of this, very much an oddity in the news. And in order to survive, in order to pay her bills, she turned to cabaret and started singing very much like Marlene Dietrich, these kind of torch songs in her act.
Yeah, I mean, I think that she was interested in performing before, but you know, all along. But yeah, and when she did my father's show, just from the because unfortunately, you know, my father passed before I could ask him all these questions, and his.
So you kind of discovered this.
Yes. When my father passed, he had been very successful, and then his fortunes changed, and then he was like in this, you know, shithole apartment. Like, he went from this great big house to this kind of shithole apartment in the Times Square area. And so when he passed, I was in his apartment, and all that he had was these photographs from, you know, from mm-hmm. back then. And then it was just like, what? Christine Jorgensen. So I have to kind of just, you know, figure this all out myself. But, you know, from what I can imagine, it's that Christine Jorgensen was making these appearances and was getting paid, you know, hopefully, you know, well, and that even though the audience was all Spanish speaking with the translator, that they would ask, like, you know, kind of all the silly, naive questions. And
can
then,
you have a baby? How many babies are going to have?
Because
is it hard to have a period now?
I think my father was actually holding up some sort of magazine, so they were probably reading from the magazine and the translator was translating. But you know, but she, you know, it's a really cool picture. I mean, she looks super happy, and then my father's like, I'm science.
Well, was the Latino cabaret scene at that time had a lot of people that were sort of on the fringes of society, because it was like being a Latino in New York City in the 1950s might have been,
oh my God,
put you
I love
in that
it.
Situation.
Well, what happened is that people came to New York, uh-huh. and this Latin Standards takes place. I mean, the two locations are Manhattan and San Francisco, and San Francisco is all about the drag queens and Latino gay culture that's being displaced. And then in New York, it was about my father's milieu, which was Latino artists that, you know, that were existed in this kind of subculture. And so, hey, what was the question?
To me, it's very interesting seeing that Christine Jorgensen sort of being a major figure in your father's life, in the sense that it's like, you know, being a Latino in the New York City in the 1950s, there was a lot of emigration, or as Larry LaFontaine likes to say, diaspora, coming from Cuba, coming from Puerto Rico, coming from other parts of Latin America into New York City in that time period.
I'm back, Marcus, back. Okay.
So we created our own culture and our own art in those communities.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've had a lot of watermelon. So the thing is that the Latino communities were coming from, and the Latino communities are Puerto Rico, Cuba, Mexico, Dominican Republic, and everyone has their own own specific culture. And they were all coming into New York, and they all had their own cultural stars and heroes. And so what my father did was, and he had a partner at the time, what they did was they found the stars from those countries, and then they booked them into the shows in New York. And besides that, there were also emerging performers in New York who would work at factories in the daytime, but then in the shows they were stars, and my father made everyone, you know, made the audience feel like they were seeing the biggest stars in the world. And yet these were folks who were working the 9-to-5 factory job as well to get along in New York. And so it was, that was his, I think that was his strategy.
Was this true for Tito Puente and Celia Cruz as well, or in that time period?
Those are superstars. And so my father would have a variety show where often in the beginning of the show, right after the Mexican movie with the woman who couldn't have children anymore, there would be a
bandstand. So they would play a movie, a melodramatic movie first.
Melodramatic movie, or you know, whatever Mexican movie. Mexico was our Hollywood. And then the movie would be over, and then it would be the entr'acte, and it would be this variety show. And it would start with a bandstand with bands like Tito Rodriguez and Tito Puente, which was the biggest star. And then, of course, if my father could land someone like Celia Cruz, which he had in her shows. Cantinflas was in my father's shows. You know, my father
was Charlie Chaplin of Mexico.
Yeah. And, yeah. Oh, a great performer. And
sorry to introduce this great Charlie comedian to this metaphor, the something of something, you know. Sorry.
He was a meme. So that was a thing. It was like you would get a little bit of everything. And then my father would write these sketches. One of the sketches that was very popular was called La Familia Cómica. And the funny family. And my mother was in the shows. My parents met because my mother was a dancer. And so she was in my father's shows. And then they got married. And then she would be an actress in his comedy sketches, La Familia Cómica. So there would be everything. There would be variety artists like jugglers and plate spinners and all this. And
so your dad was kind of like Chespirito in a lot of ways. Roberto Gómez Bolaños, who I guess he was known as Little Shakespeare.
And Tintan was the little person who was very famous in the movies and would make live appearances. So my
father married his co-star. The woman who played Florinda in Chespirito married in Chavo del Ocho, she married him, and your dad married his co-star, basically.
He married his co-star for a while. The most famous person that my parents knew was Ricardo Montalban's brother, Carlos Montalban.
Okay. What? Yeah. He was the somebody?
Carlos Montalban, yeah. He was in the mix somewhere.
He was also on Fantasy Island, too.
He was also.
But he played, you know, like, he looked like he was one of the.
What, the brother, Carlos?
Yeah, Carlos.
Yeah. Yeah. So Carlos was in the shows. Ricardo, I don't know if there was any. But, you know, I met Tito Puente in San Francisco. I think it was the 90s, and there was this big thing called the Black and White Ball, and Tito Puente was, you know, one of the many bands, the like high end orchestras that was playing, and I went and I actually met him, and he said, "I used to change your diapers." He has like this New York. I didn't do it.
Right, I used to change your diapers.
I used to change your diapers.
Marga.
I know none of that.
You had such stinky poop.
I was wearing diapers at the time. And then I tried to see.
You like to eat those raisins, and they just exploded.
I tried to see Celia Cruz too. She played in San Francisco, but they wouldn't open the door for me. I went to the whole fucking show, and I wouldn't get into. She would not change my diapers. Yeah, but I have I have 8x10 glossies of Celia Cruz talking to my dad.
So explain to us in Latin standards your show. You also take the story into San Francisco more recently. Around the time period of Peaches Christ and all these drag queens.
I love Peaches.
That are sort of rising as stars as the city's getting gentrified.
There was this this bar for 30 years in San Francisco called Esta Noche. Mm-hmm. And fans of the HBO show called Looking will see that Esta Noche is part of the storyline. Season one, you actually see filming in Esta Noche. season two, Esta Noche, had closed. So they actually just created a new Esta Noche at another bar in San Francisco called Doc's Clock. But Esta Noche was famous for a large portrait of the Andy Warhol superstar Joe D'Alessandro, like a whole naked portrait. And so that had to be recreated for season two. But Esta Noche was, for 30 years, the place where gay Latinos could go and be safe and see drag performers. And the bar would play Latin music. And it was a dive and a dump. And it's in the heart of the gentrification that is wiping us all out in San Francisco. So what I did in 2012 is that I walked into Esta Noche, which I kind of knew, but I hadn't really paid attention to. I walked in there to start a comedy night. And I got a night, and I started doing it every Thursday, and I did it for 2 years. And throughout that 2 years, I got to know the drag queens who worked on the weekends, and they're part of the story of Latin Standards. And the connection...
What can you say the names or the queens?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, drop those names.
Oh, yes.
They love hearing their names.
Oh, yeah, Persia. Uh-huh. Persia is in... I don't know. Have you seen the video Google app?
I love the title.
Oh,
Google app.
Persia is gorgeous, and Persia has a so many talents.
She likes to wear like a hijab in her photos.
In Google app. Well, she has all kinds of. She has really great.
You can follow her on Twitter at Persia415.
Yeah. Persia, and then Lulu, and I don't know Lulu's handle.
Lulu, yeah.
You know Lulu from San Francisco?
Mm-hmm. We interviewed her at back in when Tranny Shack was closing, I think.
Well, there's two Lulus. Is it a Latino Lulu?
No, it's a white woman.
Yeah, that's the other Lulu. There's a Latino Lulu. Lulu, I can't. I know a Lou Ramirez, but Lulu from San Francisco is a different one. And then there was Mitzi, who I really wanted to have sex with. But
because you fell in love with these hot drag queens.
Oh God, yes.
And they're like,
oh God, yes.
What is this lesbian? Get off me, girl. I don't swing that way.
No,
oh no.
Oh no.
You got it on.
I don't know if you
have animal magnetism.
Okay, good. You got it.
They swiped right on your profile.
So Persia and Lulu and Mitzi would kind of do little guest appearances at my comedy show. But I basically had just your regular run-of-the-mill, like, stand-up, schlubby, white people comics. And it was, like, on a night that was, like, you know, kind of dead at Esta Noche. And we did our show. But it was wonderful because I reconnected with the community. And then the sad part was that the bar was sold to a martini bar, you know, a tech... the rich people, and it became, you know,
garbage.
Something. Well, no, I mean, I'm
it's
not.
Changed it's
just,
the identity.
Yeah, it's changed. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, it's just
it's
not,
garbage. No, you would never be caught dead in there now. Let's just put. I mean, you know,
they poison their drinks.
They
right?
tried that. They tried that here.
I still get free
in Chicago.
Drinks there
was this that one place true. That used to be this amazing club that would bring all these like famous drag queens, and then they shut it down and turned it into a whiskey bar, and nobody would be caught dead inside it.
Yeah,
it was like embarrassing. Like if you told your friends you went there, you'd be like, I'm so sorry you had to go.
But not to defend anybody, but at this bar, they do have certain like plaques that, you know,
acknowledging the history
of
Esta Noche. So It's
not all a wash. Okay. But it does, like, that place used to smell so bad, and it was great.
Esta Noche smelled bad?
Yeah, like my girlfriend broke up with me because I was working there. Like my girlfriend of 6 years broke up with me because I was working there.
She what did just, it smell like?
It smelled like, well, the Yelp reviews will tell you everything, but it smelled like urine and bleach.
Okay.
Urine and bleach.
That happened to us when we did a live podcast at the Stud. This was in 2007? 2006?
Oh, Stud. That bathroom's pretty scary.
Yeah, and and it was Heclina's club, right? So we get there.
She worked the door.
She worked the door or something.
Heclina worked the door?
Yeah.
She used to do Training Shack there.
Yeah,
yeah, but she didn't work the door. Chocolate
she worked
the
our door.
Door.
But so we get there, and there was this big pile of puke in the middle of the floor. And I'm like, are you guys going to clean this up? And they're like, oh, yeah, well, one of the guys here, he wasn't feeling too well. And I'm like, we're going to be doing a show in like in an hour, yeah. You know?
We
and
have a like, people coming.
Yeah. And they're all like, oh, we forgot to rent a mop.
It was crazy.
And I was just like, look, dude, go to hardware store. You know, here's $20. Go buy a mop. I mean, it was insane. And my friend was like, yeah, the clubs in San Francisco are a little bit stinky.
Well, you know, but now Heclina has now that it's completely fancy different. Club Oasis.
And now it's like, it's a hotel, practically. It's like...
It's like a spa.
It's a spa.
It's a gay spa. Yeah. It's really great. But yeah, there's...
And have we lost something with that gritty grassroots environment?
Oh, but I want to tell you, the stud is still there, and it's run...
No, they closed that place and they built it someplace else.
No.
No, they bought it, right?
It was saved by a collective.
I didn't realize they kept it in the same place.
Queer, loving people, and it's still there. And David Glamourmore has a Monday night, right?
Yeah.
Where they make crafts, and yeah, no, it's good. It's good.
It's like an arts and crafts store now or something?
On Monday.
That's great.
Arts, crafts, and drugs, I think, yeah.
So you start a lot of drag queens beating outfits, right?
Yeah. In sequence. I mean, people like Monday is a good night. It's like people need a place to go.
Yeah.
And if you have to make crafts, okay.
Why not?
It's a small
place. And now
price
they don't have
pay.
Drag Race running on Monday nights anymore, so you have to do something.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But then, so Stud is still happening, and then there's Oasis, and there's the Eagle, which I think was bought by. Might be bought by some straight people, but they still keep, you know, they still keep all the leather, embellishments around, and there's still like gay nights and all that.
Yeah,
so.
I remember when the Eagle had its heyday, you know, and we used to go to San Francisco, and I think one time we were there with Sharon Needles and causing a ruckus because some of the queens were like jealous. That she was on TV and she had a huge name, you know?
Oh,
and there was like, she's here. Was it the powerhouse?
Yeah.
And they were like, there was animosity there. There was like, you know, because.
How shocking.
Drag Race was just getting started in season 4, you know, and now it's this institution. And I feel like in a lot of ways, like LGBT culture and neighborhoods and even, you know, with Drag Race, we've all sort of got either grown up, we've become assimilated, become mainstream. How would you characterize the change that's happened in the last 15 years?
I think jealousy has been unchanged.
We're still deeply jealous of
each
other.
Well, that's just a show business thing.
Yeah.
And so drag queens are show business. And I mean, I'm jealous. And I mean, someone wanted to send me like a link for like Jimmy Fallon, like talking. It's like, I don't want to hear about other comedians. I don't. Jealousy is timeless. It's classic.
But I'm talking about like the way that our community used to be very much a grassroots experience in the sense that we struggled so much financially. Now you have some of these queens, you know, making six figures. A lot of these nightclubs that we used to sort of, are sort of now become kind of almost, the Stud. I haven't been to it since it got bought out, but it sounds almost like a museum to the Stud.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Is it really an organic living entity the way it used to be, or is it possible to be poor and queer in San Francisco anymore?
I think there's two queer San Franciscos. There's two queer San Franciscos, and there's the political poor San Francisco that has a lot of stuff going on, and then there's the mainstream San Francisco. I mean, I've experienced this from being a queer comic. When we had Logo and then we had the queer audience gravitating towards straight performers who sort of, I can't think of another word, but pander, seduced the gay audience. And then it wasn't enough to be someone who, sacrificed your career or, you know, who just stayed focused on the kind of experience that we have as gay people in a culture that might be homophobic. It was more about, we now can get big names at Pride, and so I'm going to Pride right now. And, you know, Pride is really about booking big names, and it doesn't really have to do with merit or paying your dues as a queer person. It's about who's the most famous person that we could get for Pride. You know what I mean?
What happened in was it Pittsburgh that sold their rights to naming their Pride to like a
their
corporation?
Pride March, or their Pride is now owned by like, yeah, I'll have to Google that real quick. We reported on, I think, like 2 weeks ago, and the people are up in an uproar because it's like, it's by a company that fracks. It's like Pittsburgh, like
fracking.
An energy corporation. So it's like something EEC, EEQ, something like that.
EQT.
Pride. EQT Pride.
Oh, God.
Also, too, they've,
oh, you know, no.
they've donated money to like politicians who are
conservative, right wing politicians. So they're buying both ends against the middle. And so right now, the Pittsburgh Pride celebration's fragmented. So there's,
we'll see what happens.
Basically, like, you know, it would be the equivalent. I can't think of a corporation that would, you know, spends a lot of money. Maybe like if Cash for Gold sponsored the Pride Parade, you know, because most of the Cash for Gold companies, you know, they're always advertising on Fox because they want basically to keep us all scared, you know, and people who are like into conspiracy theories and build underground shelters, they love gold, you know.
Mark, so you give them money and they give you gold?
Yeah, you never heard of CashForGold.com?
Yeah, I've seen that, but I get that confused with the people with gold teeth. Is that a different thing?
It's sometimes the same thing, but, you know, crazy people are obsessed with gold. They like shiny things, and they're worried that, like, their dollar's not backed up by, like, real things, so, like, they have to get on a dollar.
Because I can't go to a store with gold and buy, like,
no.
You can't,
food.
Yeah, it would be nice if you were, like, a pirate.
You keep it in a little lockbox somewhere.
Because I think I have gold somewhere in my mouth.
Well, I think in some countries they would like kill you just for your teeth.
Yeah, they take it out.
Yeah,
they won't rip them out. Well, let's go back to your show, Canciones de mi Padre, right?
Yeah, Canciones de mi Padre. Yeah, I know, right? That bitch.
Were you inspired a little bit by Linda Ronstadt at all?
No, but it you know, when you start on an idea and then you realize, oh, but that's God. Damn it, she came up with that title.
Well, it was kind of weird, but like, of course you remember when that came out. It was like, what is the late
1989.
It was kind of people like, is everybody, remember, you know, she presents as like a white person, then all of a sudden she comes out with this Latina album.
She was good, though. Yeah.
La Charreada, one of her best songs.
So you're singing. Are you singing in some of your dad's songs in this show?
Let's see. Do I sing? I play my... Like I have the recording, so I play the songs at Urban Theater Company. We're going to do all the sound that we had in New York, which I think actually this show is really about more sound than the images. Even though I have all these great images that we projected, I realize now that, I mean, the whole point of being a storyteller is to have people imagine it and to show them slides. Kind of just takes, you know, it just kind of kills that energy. So. But I will have my father's music playing, and then I may harmonize. But my conceit of the show is that it's a concert. This is my final farewell concert, and I'm going to do these songs that were written by my father. But then I'm not going to sing. There's no band, and then the whole idea is that I don't really like music because I'm a comedian and I'm jealous of music. And then I go into this whole thing about Adele. I start, you know, like Adele can just, like when I went to see Adele, it's like, I like listening to the stories and like, I really listen to the stories when a singer goes up there on stage.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, the banter. But then when they start singing, I totally space out because I could buy this. I could download this. You know?
What is it? Was that Chris Rock said about the difference between musicians and comedians is that musicians will be forced to play the same stupid song to the day they die.
Yep.
Whereas a comedian, you can come up with the best joke and people don't want to hear it twice.
You say it twice and they say you suck. I do mention that in my show. Yeah, yeah.
Because you've come up with a lot of great lines over your career.
Well, someone told me that someone has to hear a joke three times before, like, they really know it. So, like how much can you get away with? And so, like, I kind of know. Like,
but, you know, there are comedians out there that will do the same exact act for a decade. They just do it in different venues. You know, right. Because, like, these people may have never heard this before.
Right. You can't go to the same venue or the same town. Or I mean, I keep a catalog of where I've told this joke.
I mean, how many times did we hear Ellen DeGeneres' story about being taught to swim by her parents throwing her off a boat?
Oh, I never heard that story.
It was terrifying. And every time I heard it
on the phone,
I was like, they're trying to kill you. And that was the punchline. And I'm like, this is really depressing and sad. And so when she finally came out as a lesbian, it was like, well, yeah, you know,
I have an Ellen DeGeneres story.
Oh, let's hear it.
Yeah, because you know everybody.
Okay, well, I went, you know, because she started out in San Francisco. I mean, she started out in New Orleans or whatever, but then she really, you know, she really caught fire, like, after a few years in San Francisco.
Because San Francisco was a huge comedy. Chicago.
Everybody was starting. That's kind of what started. Yeah, yeah, the 80s. Yeah. Margaret. Oh, my God. Yeah. Margaret. I know. See every now and then. But Ellen, she's not the warmest person. I don't care what people think. But, I mean, wait.
I agree with you. Yeah. She's
she's
an ice queen.
She's ice queen. Yeah, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to be a warm person.
Mm-hmm. I've met Ellen
just
in person.
Funny.
Yeah.
Just be funny. All right.
Yeah, but, back in the day.
Okay, so she... Okay,
she has a great.
So you had sexual experience with her, or what?
No.
She had a terrible leg.
Okay, I was working before I started doing comedy. I was working at a clothing store on Castro Street in the 80s, and it was called High Gear, and it was t-shirts. It was like things that gay men liked. It was t-shirts and socks, and so I would fold. You know, like, I know how to fold a t-shirt really well, and then tank tops. You know, things that guys liked in the 80s, you know, and then one time, and I sort of knew of Ellen through mutual friends. And one time she walked by with this woman that she was dating, and the woman was like super pretty. And, you know, Ellen, it's like, I wouldn't.
She does not fuck ugly.
Yeah, so the woman was super
pretty.
All
the women she has sex with are supermodels, yeah.
The woman had kind of like a Christy Brinkley vibe, and like a lot of flowing hair. And so they came into, like, my t-shirt store, and I was like, oh, man, that girl's hot. And I sort of knew of Ellen. You know, like, she hadn't been famous yet. We were all doing
But she was doing the TV specials and stuff.
No, this is before the...
Before she was the receptionist in the TV show Open House on Fox.
Before that. Yeah, she was just in San Francisco, and she was building all that, but nothing had happened yet. So she had this girlfriend. Yeah, because she had dumped that girlfriend when she got famous, of course. And so the girlfriend, like, walked in... And kind of like was like all excited. The girlfriend was like making a big fuss. And then me and the girlfriend wound up in the dressing room, like pretending that we were making out. And then Ellen was just like standing in the store.
And then just pretending to make out?
Well, I think I was kind of like, I don't know.
You seduced Ellen's girlfriend? No wonder she hates you.
No, the girlfriend came in. Like, she was all hot for me. She was playing some sort of game, mind game on Ellen. Mm. But it was good for me. I mean, this is really what I, you know.
It blew up your ego.
I live for. Blew up my ego. Yeah.
Now Ellen was jealous of you.
Perhaps, yeah. Ellen back then was a little bit chubbier than you see the Ellen now.
When I met her at Chances, she was just hanging out there. This was 1991. She had guns. I mean, Ellen lifted weights back in the day. And
91, really?
Yeah, she had a really tight body. I was like...
That's because of me, probably. She decided to go work
out.
She
went to hit the weights back then. I was just like, wow. It's like, who knew, you know? But yeah, she had biceps.
Another time I saw Ellen was after the on the premiere of Sphere.
That's right. You and Queen Latifah.
Me and Queen Latifah.
You were sort of like this mainstream Hollywood lesbian actor for some time, right? It's like you're in Batman Forever. You played the reporter.
Tracy Ullman Show, Batman Forever. But they were all small parts. But, you know.
But they were like, you were the we need a Latina lesbian. Let's get Marga Gomez.
Exactly. Yeah.
Before Michelle Rodriguez came in.
I've fallen into that. Yeah. I don't know if Michelle wants that. I don't think she wants it, so I'll take it. I'll take anything Michelle Rodriguez doesn't want.
Well, you're like Blondie to her Cyndi Lauper.
Isn't she the one that's also like right now in that movie that the trans people don't like? Isn't she the one that's playing the
alien?
The guy that the Sigourney Weaver's in it, and it's a man, and he pisses off Sigourney Weaver, who's some kind of surgeon. So she kidnaps him and gives him sex reassignment surgery, and so he's also a hit man or a hit woman or
with a nice set of tits.
And that was going to go eke revenge on like the people that gave him a sex change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I probably
that reminds me of
spoiler
that
alert, Mark.
Well, that's the whole
Ellen
plot
Barkin
of the story.
Called Switch. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so hot. I love Ellen Barkin. But the so Ellen DeGeneres was she was with Anne H. Remember Anne H. Was the woman with the
who talks chanclas. To aliens.
She went crazy and then she went to that farmhouse and she asked for their slippers, their chanclas, and to wear that. Okay, so they were still together, and they had Anne H. had just done the Barry Levinson film Wag the Dog. And after that film, Barry Levinson directed Sphere, which I was in as Jane Edmonds, computer expert, military personnel. It was a
Sphere typecast.
Is not to dissuade anyone from watching it on Netflix, because I do get money from that. But it's a just ridiculous, stupid, boring movie. And when I and when I got the script, I thought, God, this is really boring. This is really, I can't believe they're gonna fix this, right? And they didn't. And then we did the movie, and then my agency dropped me because the movie was such a bomb. But we had the premiere at not the usual place where you have premieres, which is like by Man's Chinese. We had Westwood, which is by UCLA, so it's kind of like the secondary place to have it. So we had the we had the premiere there, and then we went to like the party. And at the party, Anne H. was there with Ellen, her girlfriend. And I thought, God, this movie was like, I sat there and I watched the whole movie, and I realized this movie is so stupid, and I can't, like, who can I talk to? And then I saw Ellen, and I thought, Ellen's a comic. We're going to laugh about this. And then Ellen and Anne walk up to me, and I was like, and they were like that movie. And I was going, yeah. And they're going, so amazing. And then Anne H. is going, it was deep. Just blew my mind. It's like your mind is already blown, Anne H. You're crazy. And Ellen, you're crazy for being with her. It's like, who am I going to talk to?
Do you think they really liked it, or were they just kind of like, let's be supportive?
I think they really liked it, because you have to lose your mind a little bit to make it.
Was she trying to get even with you because you were trying to steal her girlfriend back in the...
Maybe.
She remembered you?
Yeah, look, I got Anne Hitch now.
This is like a Seinfeld lesbian episode, you know?
You think she held on to that?
Oh, yeah. She still holds a grudge. She's like trying to take my woman. I'm Margot Gomez. I want to show you. That movie was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Yeah. You did such a good job. It was great. What about Sandra Bernhard or Margaret Cho? Because there were two other comedians that sort of came up in the same scene as you.
Sandra, I think we've like talked to each other on Twitter, but don't really. We haven't like met each other, but we did have the same manager, Irene Pinn, who passed away about 6 months ago. And then Margaret Cho, I met when she was just starting out in San Francisco, and she's hella cool, and I love her. And
you remember that reality TV show she had where she was like pretending to be a reality TV star?
She came to San Francisco and filmed some things there.
Selena Luna was her personal assistant.
Fantastic, yeah.
So if you can get copies of that episode, those series now in hindsight, I imagine it must be hysterically funny. But at that time,
those things are better, like in hindsight.
Yeah, because they were trying to promote it as real, you know? Yeah. Like every episode was like, Margaret had some, you know, and it was kind of trying to follow My Life on the D-List with Kathy Griffin.
Right.
Who's, made some pretty poor choices this week. She's apologized for posing.
Decapitation.
Yeah, with a head of Donald
Decapitation
Trump.
Decapitation is just not going to work.
Looks like Kathy Griffin's joined ISIS.
For the listeners who haven't seen it, she worked with a photographer, and she has a, you know, basically Donald Trump's head, and it's all bloody, and she's holding it out in front of her, and like they're like, ha ha ha, it's laughing, you know, and they're like, well, he points out like when Megyn Kelly's having her period, that she's all bloody, so why not point out when he's all bloody? And so, yeah, people are like, no, you crossed a line. Well, so she issued an apology and is really just begging for everyone's forgiveness.
And what's interesting, I think it might be a publicity mm-hmm. stunt in some ways.
Well, but she's also working, like, she just was named, like, the face of, what is it, like, Tushy, like, the thing that cleans your ass. So, like, one of the, like, on the Tushy water spray system that cleans your butt.
When what? I sit on the, how do we get that?
No, the Squatty Potty. I'm sorry.
Oh, she's Squatty Potty.
She's the Squatty Potty
what
representative.
What do you need a Squatty Potty? I mean, like, can't you do that? I mean, I've been doing that. I go on point when I poop now because I understand that it's...
All you need to do when you're taking a shit
you
is raise your feet.
Squatty Potty. Yeah. On
like
point.
A ballerina.
Yeah.
Do you know what on point means?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to explain
have
for the listeners.
Point? Yeah, yeah. Oh, sorry. Don't your listeners know ballet?
Heels are not touching the ground.
I thought this was a ballet podcast.
You want to get your colon in the right position.
I do it. I do it, and it's also great for my thigh muscles.
There's a Korean spa that Mark and I go to called King Spa in Niles. Free plug. You love that place, right? Your friend here.
We love spas.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. You can eat, and it's family friendly, right? So it's not like Steamworks for Korean people, no. But it's actually a non-sexual spa, and they serve Korean food inside, and they have all these rooms.
What in the spa? In the spa, you can eat.
Yeah.
You can eat and steam?
No, they have a restaurant.
They have a restaurant inside there. It's really amazing.
Okay, yes.
And in the bathrooms, they have a squatty potty, and you can use it there. And you're kind of like, you know, your technique works just as good, I would say. It's a little bit better to use a squatty potty, but not that much.
The best thing to do is just put some newspaper down on the floor and just squat and shit on the newspaper and then just recycle all of it or compost it.
I'm going to ask your dog about that.
You've been here in Chicago. A lot of people do go to museums, you know, see all the great landmarks. You've been chasing after our great Puerto Rican restaurants here.
I'm here with my dear friend Denise, and we're here from San Francisco. And Denise has been, I haven't seen her because she's been going to the museum. She's been going to the Art Institute. But I, however, have been trying to, because it's very hard to find Puerto Rican food, so I've been trying to find the best mofongo. But I didn't get here till Sunday. So Monday, everything was closed, and I had a very bad jibarito sandwich, tostones with whatever filling.
Explain to the listeners what a jibarito sandwich is.
Jibarito sandwich is you have tostones, which is a mashed, a savory plantain, and instead
of bread,
it's
like a potato chip, but it's thick.
Yes, it's because if you don't have bread, it's kind of paleo. If you're on a paleo diet, it's kind of paleo.
It's the length of, because you use the whole plantain.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so it's like a long sandwich.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm pretty sure there's more fat in that than a slice of bread. But I had that, and I had that at kind of just a random place, and I didn't die. I was very happy. And then today, I went to the ultimate Puerto Rican restaurant in my life. I mean, they made a better pastel than my mother, but my mother made a bit better arroz con gandules, and it was called Cocina Boricua, and I had a pastele, it's all made out of mashed bananas, but the pastele, and then I had the jibarito, and also the women had sort of and it's very hard to tell with Latinos if they're gay or they're not gay, but, you know, she called me mommy, and that is like, you know, and I'm sort of like more masculine of center.
Yeah.
But when you call me mommy, it's like, I'll do whatever
horny.
You want. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, whatever. So,
I used to get a little shocked when young men, gay men, especially, be like, hey, daddy, let's get it on. And I was like, I am not that old, you know?
And now you're just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah. I try not to protest.
Yeah. As long as you're pointing out, you call me anything you want.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're a lesbian icon. You're a celebrity.
A celebrity. A celesbian, we say.
Celesbian.
Yeah.
Does that, you know, when you're traveling and you get on the hookup apps and stuff, is it, do they recognize you? Do they go, oh, you know, Margaret Gomez?
Well, guys, not in Chicago.
Margaret told me to bring this up. Anyway.
You threw me under the bus. You threw me under the CTA.
Nice local callback.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, we know it. We know it. Okay, so I was really excited because I've gone through everybody on Tinder, and I've seen all the lesbians over 40, like all 10 of us. And so I was like, oh, go to a new city. Absolutely. Because
yeah,
then Tinder
meat.
Changes, yeah. And you don't have to
fresh
pay.
Fresh seafood.
You don't have to pay. It's your location. It's location-based. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, oh, there's going to be so many women. And then I was like going through them and was like, and then there was one, I was like, oh, and then I accidentally swiped left. And then I went through all of them, and then in 24 hours.
You might have a new stack ready. There might be a new one.
Did you feel like you got trigger happy up. With those swiping apps? It's like,
no, because it's can I just
say it? Yeah.
I don't want to look at that face. I don't want to look at that face close up in bed. Like a lot of them are bed, like give
image.
You a serving suggestion of what I look like in bed.
No.
It's like, you know, so it's like, it's also like I reject based on like the way you style your photograph. It's not the way you look. It's how you design
monsters. Mm-hmm. If you are,
shame on
you.
Yeah. No taste.
If you're like, bad at Instagram filters, you're going to kill my boner.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like that.
No filters.
Green filters. It's like what?
I've got a green filter that's going crazy right now. Not below. Yeah. But now you don't, I watched a YouTube video from a millennial, barely like a 19-year-old, and she says you don't use the filters.
Filters are out now.
Filters are out. You do edit.
Because looking, that's what cost looking.
Because
looking had all that green, weird, neon filter, and I always thought it was very unflattering for the actors. We saw Jonathan Groff, the star of Looking, jogging down San Francisco.
The street.
And I was just, you know.
Wait, you have a street called San Francisco?
No. In San Francisco. Marco and I were walking, and he was jogging down the street. And I was like, we had just seen him in the HBO special, The Naked Heart.
Normal Heart.
Where he, in the beginning, spoiler alert, in the beginning of the series, he dies. He becomes one of the first gay men to die of AIDS. And he has this very tragic moment. He's at the beach on Fire Island, and he passes out and dies on the beach.
In the Normal Heart?
Yeah, in the beginning of the HBO.
That's the one
film.
With Mark Ruffalo?
Yeah. Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I said, I'm trying to get his attention. I just got nervous and I just said, I really liked it how you died of AIDS. He just gave me this nasty look.
Which character was he in Looking?
He was the lead.
He was the lead.
Wait, but there was like three leads.
He was the white guy, so he's the lead.
Oh, he was the guy who at the end said he had a lesbian haircut, and then I got mad.
He was the only.
He was the guy
twink.
Who had the. He was the tech guy. He was the tech guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So
he was in Glee, though.
He was also in Glee. He's been in a lot of stuff. He was the king in Hamilton on Broadway.
Yeah, you'll be back someday.
I'm going to be a drag king in August.
Oh, for what?
For this show in San Francisco called Dandy, and I'm like, I think I'm going to wear rompers.
Oh, like a romper?
Whatever.
For those guys are wearing the rompers.
Yeah,
now.
I'm going to get make my legs really hairy.
Oh, hot.
And wear a romper.
How are you going to make
Sasquatch
your legs hairy?
With just a grow big dick. Huh? I don't know. I'm going to start growing them out now.
You know, they sell fabric that looks like hairy skin.
I might need that because it's kind of, it's uneven.
It'll make you look like
my
gorilla.
My leg hair growth. You know? Yeah, that's what I want.
I want a beast.
Yeah.
You were on the Christmas special. Was that the one on?
Sense8.
On Netflix, on Sense8.
Yes. Yeah, that was so awesome.
You played the owner of the safe house for battered women.
I was the director of
the director,
whatever. Yeah, I had the keys.
Yeah, you were the boss
keys
lady.
To the shelter, the women's shelter. That was so such a great experience. I mean, those people are just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. That show is so cool. And
they cut you from the orgy scene or something. They're like, nobody wants to get eaten out by you.
No,
Margo.
I really, I would have been so good at that.
It's all about orgies.
Everybody talks about Sensei. They just talk about they had orgies with all kinds of people.
My scene is 10 minutes after the orgy scene.
So, you get the afterglow.
Yeah. So hopefully people are just hanging out thinking there's going to be more orgy. And then they see me at the women's shelter.
Well, you're a people person like I am. Did you tell Lana Wachowski, hey, you're going to put me in Sensei, get me into some of that orgy scene action, huh? She's like, no.
I want to be in season 3 so people could just write to Sensei and say, hey, you know Lucerne from the women's shelter? We'd like to see her fuck.
Lucerne from Switzerland?
Yeah.
One thing I've never really talked too much about you is your appearance on Batman Forever.
Okay.
The news reporter who I think you asked a
journalist.
You were a journalist. Yes.
Yeah, the credits journalist Margaret Gomez.
How did that even happen? Or that was a movie that ruined the Batman franchise, right? It had Poison Ivy, who Alaska Thunderfuck later said, "My name's Alaska, what's yours?" And Poison Ivy says, "My name's Poison Ivy, what's yours?" And that's the movie that
who's Poison Ivy? Drew Barrymore?
No, that's
Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman.
No, she wasn't in that.
She was in that. She was
Dr. Freeze with they had so many people in it.
It was
you didn't
Val
even
Kilmer,
notice.
Nicole
yes.
Kidman, Jim
you were
Carrey.
In that one?
Yeah.
Oh, you're in the wrong one.
See?
Oh, it's the one with the Jim Carrey in it.
Yeah, no, mine was
Two-Face.
Mine was the
Val
gay
Kilmer,
mine was the gay Batman
about.
Directed by Joel Schumacher.
That was
Schumacher.
A good one then.
I thought so.
Yeah.
I thought
so that was the one that ended the franchise.
It was all downhill. I feel, yeah, yeah. But people like were homophobic about it because he had Batman's outfit a little bit too sexy.
But the next one he had nipples. And that's what they said.
I think he had nipples in that.
It's because it was Dr. Freeze was in it and they were like cold, so their nipples popped through.
And he said, "I used to see you. Chill out."
You can see me. All my lines were cut.
From the movie? You had lines?
I had two lines. Yeah, I got Batman Forever. That's the Batman. I mean, Batman Forever.
Okay.
And I got it, I think, through this agent who was not, she was not good, but she was friends with Joel Schumacher. And I got it. Oh, no, I actually auditioned for it and I was confused about where to look. And I got it because I gave my audition and I looked confused and that looked like I was acting. So I got it. And then I had this agent and she was friends with Joel Schumacher and I met Joel Schumacher. Like it was kind of like this Batman Forever was kind of all nepotism. Mm-hmm. So one of the actresses was, she was Stan Lee's wife. And she was a society lady. And then there was this other guy, Bruce Roberts or Bruce Cohn. And he was actually this gay talent agent in LA. And he was a journalist with me. And so I had my lines, but my lines weren't written on the first day I showed up. And then I went to Joel Schumacher and I says, "I don't have any lines." And he goes, "Hey, Akiva, write her some lines." And I thought, well, these probably aren't going to stay in the film. And they were cut. So you see me in the movie kind of looking at Batman. And then at one scene, I swear to God, when the bad guys like Tommy Lee Jones, they break in through the Gotham party.
Yes.
You see me just kind of spacing out. And my default face is kind of a Latina frown. And I'm just, and so you see me doing that, but that was it.
Resting Latina face.
Resting Latina face.
Is a frown?
It's kind of, yeah, I was kind of like, kind of just sleeping.
Oye, ¿qué está pasando aquí? That's what.
But I stand out in this one scene in the Gotham, the party that Bruce Wayne was in, because all the other women in the scene have very low cut dresses, basically almost showing the tops of their areolas.
Yeah.
But I'm the only woman in the scene with
the chair almost broke while sitting. Keep going.
Sorry. Woman in the scene with a turtleneck dress, as if they knew, hey, lesbian, you want to cover up.
Oh my God.
That was wardrobe, though. You didn't have to bring your own clothes in, right?
No, they brought me a turtleneck dress. Yeah.
Because you were a journalist. You're not there to have fun.
Exactly. I'm working.
Did you have a hat with the word press on it? Like, just like Kermit in Muppets Take Manhattan?
No, I think I had like two sort of like curler like rolls on my head. Okay. Yeah. And big false eyelashes.
Now, we know you. I mean, I've known of your work and I've admired your work through years, but we know you primarily through Larry LaFontaine, the creator of Lola von Miramar. And I love it when Larry is in the audience at any shows that we've done because he is such an enthusiastic audience member.
Which means he laughs.
And he laughs. And when he laughs really loud. And I feel like it's very infectious. But you, at one point in time, you've known Larry for like a long time, and it used to bug you.
Larry.
He's listening right
now. I don't know. You know, I want to thank you for your support over the years and your friendship and your adorableness. I saw you just a few months ago in New York at Taylor Mack's show. I'm going to be completely honest. And I have changed. I'm going to tell you about the old Marga. When you were at the old Marga show, your laugh was described as infectious, but it didn't infect anyone. It scared some people. It scared some people. And it scared me as well. But Larry, I want you to come to all my shows and I want you to do that again. And I feel that I am a better performer now. And I can make that laugh be infectious. I think it is a two-part process. It's the laugher with the infection, and then it's the performer. And I feel that if you and I are in sync, which we are now. We are now, Larry. Listening to me right now, okay, Larry? I see you. I see you right now. I see your panties, and I approve, Larry. So it's going to be okay. So please don't let them discourage you.
I'm not discouraging.
I love Larry's
laugh. I like
laugh.
It. I want that
I think
laugh.
They were. I think they were causing shit.
No. I think they were causing shit. Laugh.
So anyway, Larry, I love your laugh. I was immature. I was a wimp. Okay? I was a sphincter. But I am a pussy. I'm a strong pussy now. And I want your laugh. And I want you to be there. So please come this weekend.
What was it like when you first heard Larry's laugh?
It was.
Can you imitate Larry's laugh?
It was like a scream. It was like a laugh, but it was like something.
It was emotional.
Like I went to, it was dangerous. Yeah. It was troubling. It was like, call the police. It was like,
because you're
help
up on
him.
Stage. You're in an audience.
Yeah.
You're trying to tell a joke.
It's almost like Larry had, like Larry was psychic. It was before the punchline happened. That was the thing about
Larry's
laugh.
He's good at picking up when it's coming.
He knows before it's coming, and he laughs before it's coming, and that was the problem I felt, is because the audience didn't know the laugh was coming, but Larry did because Larry's so smart. And so what happened was that the audience was like so confused that
like,
they
is this
just,
a plant? Did she bring her own laugh track?
So Larry told us this story that's really wonderful and worth repeating here. So he went to see Walter Mercado, who is the Liberace of Puerto Rico. He's
a psychic
astrologer, Doritos spokesperson. If you haven't seen Walter Mercado's Doritos ad on YouTube, you owe it to yourself to check it out. So Larry was in the audience when Walter Mercado was performing, and Walter does, you know, as very full of himself. And they were introduced at the end of the show, and he turns and he's like, aquí está el con la risa. Here's the one with the laughter. Gave him just the cold shoulder. And I was like, you just met Lola von Miramar, Walter Mercado. You kiss her ass.
Here's what I want to, I think I just came up with a solution.
What?
Larry has to sit in the back.
No, because
Larry was
row.
In the front. Larry was in the front. Yeah. I know.
He but loves sitting in the front.
Well, that's the thing. If see, Larry sits in the back, that laugh is going to work to get everybody to laugh.
See,
my
the times I've had
laugh.
Larry,
he's in the front.
You want, for me as a performer, I want somebody like Larry in the front row because. It gets me going, you know? It's like, we did a live podcast at Steamworks, and I came out dressed up like this low-budget Lady Gaga kind of thing. And I did this totally, like, lame, you know, bad romance parody song. And I was just like, I was not sure of it, you know? And it was a bit embarrassing, the piece, right? And Larry's sitting there, and he's howling. He thinks it's the funniest things he's ever seen. And it gave me courage. It was like, it really got me, like, this is going to be okay. You know, when you're a performer and you're trying something new in front of an audience and you're just not sure of yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but you know? You're a different person than she is, you know?
Thank you.
So people have a different reaction the first
Fausto,
time they hear
it. Well, not a different, yeah. not even a different, but a different mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. A different, yeah. like, this was
you're,
like,
you're
this
already,
was a new work.
You're a seasoned
this
veteran.
Was actually a work that I had worked on for a long time. Okay? But I have,
because you heard the laugh before you met the person.
I have an idea.
Yes.
For Larry. Okay, Larry, you can sit in the front, but if you don't mind, I'm going to gag you. So, like, you can actually laugh. You can follow all your impulses, and it's going to sound good, mm-hmm. and people will hear it. But it's going to be just slightly mm-hmm. muted.
You know what I think you should do is just get Larry up on stage, put him in a chair, tie him up, and put a ball gag in his mouth so he can watch it right up close in person and laugh through the ball gag.
Actually, ball gag or no gag, I think I might just put Larry on stage. Actually,
well,
I just need to, Larry,
to
Larry needs
see,
to go on stage.
You've seen his Toast Tones video, right? Right?
Oh God! Yeah,
yeah. It's a work of
your
art.
Your friend here is not. We'll
she
show
has
it
not.
To her. So
she has not.
You get a little
she hasn't
bit.
Even
of,
had those donuts, have you?
You get a little bit of the laugh in there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When we're done recording this, you'll know.
When Larry is Lola, does Lola do the laugh?
Yes.
You know, the thing about it is, and this is like, Larry is one of my most treasured friends, and it's like, and whenever I ask him to laugh intentionally, he doesn't do it.
Well, that's the thing,
and I'm like, to me, it's
not fair.
It's a superpower. It's like an X-Men superpower.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work. Like, it only works when you need it to work.
I'm afraid that we've, I don't want Larry to hear this. We need to delete this entire show.
Sorry, Larry, you ruined the podcast.
Larry is an amazing person, and I think mm-hmm. that laughter is what makes him a great person to me.
Can you put in Larry's laugh in the show?
I've never been able to record it.
We should call Larry right now.
Should we call him?
Yeah, let's call him.
On
sorry,
the phone.
Sorry.
Hold on, I'll do it right now. Give me the phone.
Do we have a joke you can tell?
I mean, look. Fausto fell off his chair.
Give me your phone, Mark.
And I was able to live with that.
Here, let's just call him on the phone.
We'll call Larry.
Yeah, hold on.
And then
Larry's been kicking a bee's nest of drag queen stuff lately.
Larry's been promoting Latin standards at Urban Theater Chicago this weekend.
Hold on a second.
June 2nd and June 3rd. Don't worry, I'm just going to continue promoting. Come on, Larry.
He'll be like, hello.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Larry!
Oh.
Larry.
Who am I?
Can hear you.
Were you sleeping, Larry?
No, I was watching episode 10 for the second time.
Larry.
What?
We're talking about your amazing laugh.
Larry, can you hear me? It's Marga.
Yes, but...
That's
hi,
not
Marga.
Even it. That's not even it.
Oh.
Larry,
oh, fun.
Larry, go get a pillow. Go get a pillow.
Okay.
Do you have a pillow?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Okay.
All right. So, Larry, we want to hear your laugh, but we know that your neighbors have a curfew on you. So, we don't want you to get into trouble. And so what I learned from an ex-girlfriend is to just scream into a pillow.
Oh.
Have you ever screamed into a pillow before, Larry?
Oh, have I ever screamed into a pillow? Yes, I believe I have.
So, Larry, we were just saying how much we love your laugh.
Oh, well, that's cute. That's nice. I like your laugh, Marga. I like all of you. Are you in Chicago to do a show?
We're doing it right now.
I'm doing Feast of Fun right now. That was the whole reason. But I'm also doing Latin Standards at Urban Theater Chicago.org.
June 2nd and 3rd.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
But you know that, Larry, because you've been promoting it. Did you know that?
I do know that. I was asking it for the benefit of the listeners. No.
Everything we're doing is for the benefit of the listeners.
Yes. Oh.
Margo was intrigued, Larry, about you've kind of kicked a hornet's nest with some of these drag queens lately, huh?
Oh, yeah. What happened? I don't understand why. Because you're so pleasant.
Well, I've been trying to give it lots of thought, and well, I can say some white drag queens are very sensitive to having issues of race brought up.
Do they have
especially
white,
about Latin?
Do they have white drag fragility?
Yes, they do.
Oh.
And
como se dice en español, white fragility, white drag fragility,
fragilidad blanca travesti. And yeah, it's pretty. So I just saw episode 10. I'm seeing it twice, and it's interesting because you know now it's
drag
just.
Race.
It's, of RuPaul's Drag Race, it's like black girls and white girls, and it's like this like world of black and white where Latinos just kind of disappear. Although Nina Bonina Brown's like makeover guy, like he's so sweet, he's Latino, so you always have the Latinos playing like third wheel, playing like this tension between white people and black people, and I think that freaks people out. I think they can't deal with us.
It's hard to be in the middle.
It's unless it's a sandwich.
Where the porridge Goldilocks chose were just hot enough.
You know, I think the United States is really fucked up, and they get so caught up in like the history of slavery and Black Lives Matter and murdering black people, that they sort of forget that they've been murdering Native American and Latino people all along as well. And then when we try to remind them that this country is really about complexity and tension and struggle and violence, like they get really upset. But that's just me tonight.
What were the actual words that you used to cause where everything began?
It was a tweet.
It was tweets.
Two tweets.
It was tweets.
Yeah.
Oh.
So isn't it scary? Like how we live in a day and time that like half a sentence or like one poorly formed sentence like can set up such a storm. But well, so in the first case, I suggested to a particular drag queen that she might try to improve her humor before she did a show in San Francisco, and that was not well received.
She made a racist joke.
I want to know who it was.
Or a joke that may appear to be racist.
Would I know her?
Say. No,
I don't.
No, you wouldn't know
Well,
her.
That's even worse. That's the meanest thing anybody said.
To a drag celebrity showcase in New York, and let's just say that I did not find one of the performers to be very engaging. I thought her humor was really offensive, but offensive in a really unnecessary and kind of almost stupid way.
And poking a hornet's nest in a certain way, knowing that it was kind of stupid, right?
Well, I mean, I just thought it was bad. Okay. You know, it's if you're going to be racist while you're doing your jokes, I mean, you should really have a point. There should be like a reason while you're relying on easy stereotypes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they have to be good. Exactly.
Can't we as comedians make mistakes and make bad jokes that are racist?
If you're playing with fire, though, you have to really not burn everything down. I mean, it's
sometimes
like
you do burn everything down when you're playing with fire.
But
though.
It has to be sharp. It has to be clever. And it has to challenge
it
your
ought
notions.
To be,
you know?
It ought to be worth doing everything.
Is comedy ever a safe bet?
Ask Kathy and Griffin.
And as an artist, as a comedian who's doing edgy stuff, you always have to be ready for people to criticize or hate or not like and tell you. And then, you know, as an artist, you decide, well, am I going to like attack my audience because they didn't like it? Or am I just going to like, you know, swallow hard and say, well, next time I'm going to try to do better, or fuck you, or get out of my way.
That was part one. Part two.
Part two is that, as you all know, the fabulous Valentina got booted off RuPaul's Drag Race a week ago or a week and a half ago. And for many of us, that's been really shocking, really, really dramatic, because she was a very, very popular contestant. She's just so sweet, so beautiful, so talented, so funny.
She looked like Linda Evangelista.
So you know, I went online and I made a couple of posts pointing out that all four of the Latina contestants on this season have been kicked off.
Oh.
And you know, one at a time for different reasons, but that in Donald Trump's America, for me to have all the Latino contestants kicked off a show is worrying in a national context in which President Donald Trump would like to have all Latinos kicked out of this country. So, you know, it was sort of a general observation, and some people misunderstood my tweet to mean that I was suggesting that RuPaul, the leader of RuPaul's Drag Race, is similar to Donald Trump and is a racist, bigoted person. Although, to be fair, people have been pointing out for 10 years that the representation of Latinos on the show is not ideal and complicated, and it at times really relies on stereotypes and on demeaning the performers or the contestants on the show.
Isn't it weird, Larry? Because I mean, our Latino culture has such a connection with drag. I mean, such a long connection with drag. Yes. I mean, even, you know, I'm doing Latin standards and about my father, but even when I was a kid, like, we had drag queens coming to the house. It was something that was part of comedy and singing and the gender, you know, the gender exploration was just part of our art form from the get-go.
And I would agree.
And that we've triumphed in drag. Very, yeah. Very strange. I'm surprised. I haven't.
But isn't the whole point of a drag race to eliminate drag queens and to humiliate them? I mean, it's a reality TV show competition, isn't it?
You know, they can do whatever they want. And as audience members, we have the right to complain and criticize and call them on what they do. So it's not, you know, so there's no reason why we have to be passive observers. And also, you know, they do their thing, and sometimes they do things that make sense, and sometimes they do things that don't. I think it's part of the experience. Part of the experience of watching a reality show is that you root for certain people and you share your opinions. And sometimes they're more justified and sometimes they're not. So you know, like one particular New York drag queen seems to be very upset that I have like questioned RuPaul's politics. And for me, it's just like from a tweet, like how can you possibly interpret the complexity of an issue from like a tweet accompanying?
Well, because she's a fan of yours and she follows you. That's why, I mean, it's not, you know, you guys have a relationship too.
So you know what? So I've been trying to think that, you know, this is really such a minor issue. So like, why don't we just let this small storm blow over? I'm just going to pretend none of this had happened.
How bad is? I mean, I'm new to this.
Margo's just this really drama, curious about it.
But I mean, like I don't want to stir it up, because you're probably, I've been in a controversy where I just wanted to die, and so you might be in that situation too. And you know, I mean, I don't like people talking shit about me online, so. But, you know, when is RuPaul going to do the Drag King show?
That's never going to happen.
Wow. I think that's somebody else's job to do.
Yeah. I'm going to do it.
It's your job.
It's my job. It's my job. You know? Larry, please don't fuck up my job.
Larry, we called you up to hear your laugh because we're talking about
I know.
About
you sound like you want to cry.
Oh, well, but thank you so much for this impromptu conversation. I'm glad I was able to answer the phone and listen to the lovely Marga Gomez.
Larry, thank you so much also for, give me some shout outs on social media. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for being a friend.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much. I look forward to listening to the rest of the podcast.
And Larry, please come to my show at Urban Theater this weekend. And you're going to sit. I'm going to put you right on the stage with me.
In a ball gag. She's going to put a ball gag on your mouth.
I'm not going to gag you. I will only gag you if you sit in the audience.
With a dildo on it. So if she gets horny during the show, she can hump your face.
That's like so not me. That's not me. That's not the way I do it.
Absolutely Margot Gomez 100%.
Just drying down your back.
Larry, but I wish you were here. We're going to go out for tostones now.
Mm.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, buen provecho.
That's
Qué
a
rico.
Lie. It's a lie. Actually, I already have tostones. I have a plantain in my pants.
Well, love you guys. Thank
love
you so
you,
much for calling.
Thank you bye, so Larry. Much. Bye.
Bye. Good night. Bye.
Bye.
No, we did not get the full force of his laugh.
Yeah,
he's at home and he's trying to like keep it.
Well,
quiet.
It's just it's also
and
like
you started bringing up all that serious right. stuff.
It's tough, you know. And the thing about it is like I say all sorts of stuff on the internet and get into heated fights with people, and just because we're friends doesn't mean we're always going to agree on everything. That's all. You know, and as long as we're able to keep a conversation happening. And this is the thing that bothers me, I think, with all parties involved in these kinds of conflicts, is that it's so much healthier to be able to, even over the phone, to talk these things over, talk about them face to face, as opposed to indirectly talk about them. And I feel like with social media, it takes our interpersonal conflicts in society and it reduces them into a my viewpoint versus your viewpoint kind mm-hmm. of thing.
Yeah, and people
it escalates like a conflict.
They've lost the connection to the person when they start making comments.
All I do is post pictures of myself flexing at the gym on social media, because otherwise it's like,
but that still pisses people off,
and they're still mad about that.
Maybe you should try working on your brain instead of your muscle.
And you know who wrote that? My mother. I was like, shut up, Mom.
You're like, Mom, I have an MFA.
Yeah. What kind of degrees do you have?
Your mom's a doctor.
Yeah. Sure. Marga Gomez, get to know her amazing dad, the entertainer Willie Chevalier, in her one-woman show. Maybe her last, but like Cher, I think you'll be back for more.
Possibly.
Latin Standards this Friday and Saturday at Urban Theater in Chicago. Get your tickets, urbantheaterchicago.org. Why aren't you going to see this show? Why not? Go now.
See it. It's a must.
Okay. It's Trump's America. Do you want Trump to win? No. You must see. It's your duty.
This is
your
the only
duty.
Way you can save the country is by coming to see me in Chicago.
Yeah, otherwise.
Otherwise,
the Russians win, basically.
We are, I love this city so much.
We now, Comrade Gomez and I will learn, practice
I'm going to Russia if this doesn't work out. You know, Putin's been calling me. Well, he's been texting me. Well, he hacked my website, but still.
Thank you so much, Margo. We love you.
Thank you, Fausto. Thank you, Mark. It's so great to actually be here live. It's
in person, in the flesh.
It was juicy.
A lot of treats, a lot of treats.
I want to remind folks, too, we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus, because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We also have fantastic t-shirts for sale in our store, feastoffun.com/store. We've got some nice pride selections there. Order them now and wear them to your favorite pride event.
You wear Latino pride, Feliz Pride, with Dia de los Muertos in rainbow color skulls. You know?
Pride Navidad.
At feastoffun.com/store. And of course, Margo Gomez, people can follow you on social media on Instagram.
At Margo Gomez on Twitter.
Who's the other Margot Gomez who took your name?
Oh, you know, interesting. Are you going to stalk her right now?
I'm going to go look right now and see what...
It's funny that I never came up. I'm so busy stalking my ex-girlfriends. I never thought to stalk Margot Gomez on...
Oh, she's a nice young woman, Margarita Gomez, and she's...
She's Margot Gomez?
She's Margot Gomez.
She's Margarita Gomez. What is she doing?
She's holding her baby.
You're just Margot. She's got a baby? Were you never Margarita?
No, well, that is the name, but I've been Margot. Forever, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm a junior. My mom was Margarita, but then she became Margot the Exotic.
She has 38 followers.
My sister was Margot.
38 followers?
Yeah.
Oh, she sucks.
On Instagram?
Steal that away from her.
She's a nice mom with a nice little baby.
All right, I'm going to follow her. I'm going to follow her until she gets off of Instagram and I can get my rightful title.
Name. Snatch
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Snatch. Keyword is snatch. Margot.
Thank you for coming on.
Love you, sweetie. Bye.
Bye. It's heaps of fun.